20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. You know my guests, acmepackingcompany.com, Justice Mosqueda at JUMOSQ on social media. He who has no longer a mask in his possession because he had to send it to Chicago, to Bears Mysterio after a Packers loss, after we were the ones who unfortunately got dragged to hell. Justice, how are you hanging in there, my friend?
I'm doing all right. Had to replace my battery today. So I took an Uber because the battery was bad. So I had to get it replaced at like O'Reilly's or whatever. And Addy was at work. So I coughs. Great opening to this. Took an Uber, Bears fan. Saw my hat immediately and goes, "Ooh, what a week for you," right? He told me we had to replace the offensive line, which I told him we're not going to be able to do that for a while. I wrote that in October. We're kind of stuck with where we're at with the offensive line. So either find a guy who knows how to coach it, or this is kind of it. Do we have a count on – have we fired everyone? I think everyone has been fired. I don't know if there's a – I think Love might be safe, but there's still Malik Truthers. I don't think people are complaining about the receivers this week. The safeties – I think still have a good Q rating, and then like Micah Parsons. I think that's like Edgerrin Cooper maybe, but he gave up one of them.
I had a project in mind earlier this year when everything was hitting the fan. I could probably do it again now, of doing a search on Twitter to see how many, like to go through every player and coach and see if I could find at least one tweet that said fire, cut, or trade said player. And I wanted to see if I could make it through the entire roster to see if somebody said, fire this guy, cut this guy, trade this guy, and then just post like a collage of like all of them. And I'm like,
it's Exodia. Yeah. We collected all the pieces.
Cut or released every single one of the Green Bay Packers organization at this point in time. I think like Evan Siegel, the photographer, might be safe in the organization. Wes Hodd might be safe in the organization. You're gonna end up with like Wes, Evan Siegel, and like, you know, has anyone said anything bad about Will Shepard? Like Will Shepard might be safe. Other than that, everyone else might be gone.
Social's gone after the photo of Tough Day, and it's just guys packing in their cleats.
Oh yeah. I heard from even some like out of like just no fighter in the fight, you know, like people are like,
oh, yeah.
What is the social media person doing? I'm like, gotta be an intern.
I don't know. Yeah. I was actually shown that. I've been in a group chat with a bunch of national reporters, and they said that and were like, if this was my team, I'd probably jump off a bridge. And I was like, I've experienced ego death already, baby. Like I'm over it. It's Wednesday night when we're recording this. I was shocked it's Wednesday night. I don't know if it was because we played on Saturday or what. I've lived 5 years in the last 5 days.
Packers Twitter is not in a great spot. Packer fans are not in a great spot. There's a lot of angst and frustration, anxiety. Did you see Huber's poll on Twitter?
Yeah. So Huber put up a poll on Twitter, right? And his whole thing was, do you want to fire Matt? Do you want to fire Goot? Do you want to fire both? Are you basically running back hoping that you're a little bit healthier next year? And when I checked it last, run it back and be healthier next year was at 74% or something like that?
It's 69.4 as recording this. There's 10,917 votes as of recording this, but 69.4% just want to run it back. So his was keep both and pray for health. Is the 69.4. The next most is 17% with just firing LaFleur and keeping Goody. And then next is 9.2%, which is fire both, and 4.3%, which is fire Goody, which means only 13.5% of people want to fire Goody, and only 26.2% of people want to fire Matt overall. So like that is I was not expecting that at all based on how loud things have been. I was expecting that to probably even be like a majority of fire LaFleur, and it is not even remotely close. Again, you want, Fire Goody is what? So 73.8% want Matt to stay in some capacity. So that's not the number I was expecting.
Yeah. And again, I know people in national media, I know people who work around the league, stuff like that. And I just keep getting like asked, like, are they serious? Like, are the Packers fans serious right now? And I'm like, Packers fans are serious. I don't think the Packers actually are. Right. So. Like, that's been the whole thing with all the Schefter stuff where it's like, this is a contract dispute. This is about money. This isn't about Matt's performance. And it hasn't been for the whole year. Now, things got spooky for a sec, right? When you're down Tucker Kraft and the team had been relying on yak yards and all that stuff. We talked about this during the stretch against Carolina and Philadelphia when they scored, what, 20 points in two games? And the answer was clearly like the first tool in the toolbox for Matt is not to go to outside breaking routes. He wants to throw in breakers and he wants to run the ball. That's what he wants to do. But Jordan is good at those outside breakers, and it's what teams were giving up to you. And, you know, they, to their credit, they did adjust. Now, did the season end the way that you wanted to? No, that sucked, dude. That was a very painful experience. The entire fourth quarter, just watching the slip lead or the lead slip. Goodness gracious. I lived 5 years in the last 5 days. But I think the question was always money. The question was always the money.
Well, this is what we discussed a while back, and I've been discussing for a while, is to me, before the last game in the 5-game losing streak, was never about firing. It was like, how do they come to an agreement of the Packers maybe not wanting to give a top of the market 5-year contract, 4-year contract, whatever it is, to a coach that hasn't had the playoff success and, you know, maybe is on a losing streak. And for Matt, knowing that if he hits the open market, he can basically, you know, dictate terms of a contract, get a new coat of paint, have full job security, you know, have almost everything he wants. And so where does the rubber meet the road there? I will say, and as people know who have been listening to me here, I did also state that, hey, if you go on a 5-game losing streak and have an embarrassing loss to the Bears in the first round, that to me is the one avenue where I'm willing to have the conversation. And after the game where it, again, you completely blow it. Yeah. I was like, I totally get this now. And if like Green Bay would have decided at that point, or even now, like, hey, that's just, it's tough to come back from that. There's been too many, you know, mental mistakes. There's been too many collapses, fourth quarter, whatever's like, yeah, I would say I get it now. I understand it. And I think that if he does get this, you know, whatever happens, I think there's going to be a lot of heat on him, at least on the outside, for what happens next year with this team, assuming they stay healthy. But I can also very much see why you would want to keep him around. And the biggest thing, my biggest anchor on everything of why I'm hesitant to, like, if it were in my position, hesitant to make that call of like, yep, we're moving on from Matt, is because of the tie with Jordan and because of how good Jordan is in this offense and how, I just think this offense hums with those two together. And I don't have a huge desire to replace that aspect of it.
When I watched that game, right? I mean, there's a couple stupid plays in between, right? But I thought the overwhelming story of that game was the offensive line couldn't handle the blitzes, especially in the second half against Chicago.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Cause Rasheed Walker played the worst game of his career. Like that was nuts. I don't know why they had handled the blitzes well, the previous five halves that they played against the Chicago Bears this season. And then the second half, it just all went to crap. And it was just really inconsistent, right? It's not that they couldn't necessarily beat it. It's just like they weren't ever consistent. Because like at the end of the game, like Jordan's moving the ball. Like that was really impressive for Jordan at the end of the game. Because they were putting some pretty bad spots off of like some of the stuff that happened on early downs. I think the other thing too, linebackers got cooked, man. Like Quay might have given up like 120 yards in coverage. I know like NFL Pro, so they do the player tracking stuff. They do nearest defender, all that. Yeah. They have him down for like 84. But there's some where he's not the nearest defender, and he is the guy who blew the – like he's just straight up blew a couple coverages. Edrin Cooper, they had the big one on – what was it, like 3rd and 12, the first drive, where he's playing the flat. Caleb is looking over here. There's no one over there. And then by the time he realizes, like, oh, he's bluffing, the guy crossed his face and you give up wide open first down. Isaiah McDuffie decided to tackle his teammate and gave up a check down turned into like a 20-yard gain. We had the weird Nick Neiman situation for the 2-point play where he did indeed play his only defensive snap of the season on that scoring play that he gave up. I think the line, like, to me, the bigger issue coaching wise, I think it's the line. I think it's linebackers coach. Obviously the team's going to have to do something with the whole Halfley situation. I saw earlier Covington, who probably would be one of the leaders to either be the Packers' next defensive coordinator or Halfley's next defensive coordinator if Halfley gets a head coaching job, is interviewing right now, or he was requested to interview with the Dallas Cowboys for their defensive coordinator opening. I think those killed them. The weird stuff on special teams killed them. The Gunners, the both of your healthy Gunners being out. I said it on your show coming into this week, Andy. Last week. I was like, look, both of the Gunners are out, but the punt team has been good all season. They've been phenomenal. And I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference with both of them out. It made a huge difference. They benched one of them after the first punt and then put in Javon Bullard, who I think we had this conversation probably around midseason where you were asking me, he was like, who's like the worst special teams player who like actually gets on special teams? And I was like, Javon. And you're like, surprised by that, because you would think – the tenacity, all that stuff. And I'm not discrediting the tenacity, all that, but he's not good when they line him outside at gunner. And they went to him as the changeup because, you know, you had Catan and I think Bartholomew who were the outside guys on the first gun. And both times, big returns. Like, I don't know.
Was Bullard the one on the big return that got double teamed and like completely pushed inside on his side?
I think that was the first one.
Oh, was that the first one? Okay.
Yeah. He was the second one. But both times, there was one of them, I think the punt went the wrong direction. I don't know if that was because of the wind or whatever, and you can make excuses for the wind for McManus and all that stuff too. But, like, Cairo Santos, straight down.
He's unbelievable. What he did in that first game in Chicago against Green Bay was he was deserving of the special teams player of the week, and he just had another. We cannot get a missed field goal against Green Bay this season to save our lives. It was crazy.
Dude, maybe I should write that. I mean, I don't think people care. Like, it's smoke bulk at this point, right? So,
yeah, the luck numbers against Green Bay, we talked about that. The luck numbers were brutal for the Packers. No drop passes, no missed field goals. We did get some luck in this game with fumbles. That was nice to actually get that, where we fumbled three times and somehow found a way to get all of them back. But outside of that,
the Canarda one.
It's so, it's a hero.
The sports movie. Doc, we have 80 yards to go. Go to the ground. For the love of God, go to the ground.
The funny thing is, so the two most slow motion plays that happened this year where you could see it coming a mile away were in the opening game with Micah Parsons with the sack of Jared Goff, where everyone saw it coming. It was like a lion hunting down a gazelle, and you could just see it happening the entire way. Or in this case, a lion hunting a lion, I guess. But you could just see it, and it was so fun to watch. And in this one, it was the exact opposite. You saw him like so loose with the football, and you know how good the Chicago
Bears are. I need that thing stapled to your chest,
dude. I know, you could just see it the whole time. And then it, like, even more in slow motion, that ball rolls out in front, and you know
cartoonish.
Kennard is like the only Packer that's anywhere near this thing. He's tackled, and like, you, it's going into the Bears secondary, and you know it's only you, because like, there's that moment where it's just the ball ahead and there's nobody else in the screen, and you know the first like three jersey colors that are going to show up are Bears, and it, like, your only hope is that it somehow takes a bounce and goes out of bounds, and it doesn't. And of course you see Bear, and all of a sudden Yakety Sack starts playing, and the ball somehow mercifully finds its way out of bounds. An absurd play. But yeah, they actually got fumble luck in that game somehow, some way. The other one, Watson too, like, that one could have bounced out of bounds through the end zone. That one could have been like a billion different ways for that to go disastrous, and somehow Dobbs recovers that one. I thought for sure that was going to end up with them going four and out from the 1 yard line after that happened too, and it almost did, right? They went to fourth down, if I remember correctly. And just the dumbest, stupidest game.
It's like they constructed the perfect game to just drive us absolutely mad, where I'm like, you know, McManus hasn't really missed a kick like this entire year when he's been healthy. Like all the missed kicks were blocks, which weren't his fault. And then when he was banged up, which, I mean, if you want to put credit on him for those for pushing a play when he was banged up, go for it. Like, I think that you could convince me that's everyone's fault. Like, yeah, literally everyone in the organization's fault for going through that. But when he's been healthy, he hasn't missed kicks, and then he misses kicks. And we're really good on punt team, and then we're not good on punt team in the playoffs.
And we're good at picking up those blitzes against Chicago, and then we're not in the second half. And then we're
– But I do think that there are through lines on those, right? So the through lines on those is the offensive line's been inconsistent this whole season.
All year long.
The linebackers are very bad at dropping into their zones.
Coverage. You talked about it all year.
Yeah. I mean, that's an issue. So I think, you know, honest to God, like, Matt, no Matt, all that stuff, I'm kind of over it. Like, people have been yelling about this for 5 days, and it seems like, again, if you look at the Schefter stuff, if you look at the Rob Domofsky stuff, because I just saw right before we got on here that he had a hit on, I think, ESPN Wisconsin or ESPN Milwaukee about it. Everyone seems to be on the same page that, like, they want to get this thing done.
Yep.
It's just about the money, right? The biggest thing to me is still, like, you're going to – I'm assuming Hafley is going to be a head coach somewhere. Maybe I'm wrong. But if that does happen, one of Ansley or Covington is probably going to be your DC.
And he's probably going to be Morris.
I mean, maybe.
I think it's going to be I think it would be Raheem Morris. I think that they
I'm in the tight. I know that, but
yep. I think we'll it would see. Be Raheem. I could be wrong. I could be wrong, but I think it would
people
be
like TV stuff with Raheem too. I mean, I think he's got fans and media and stuff. But so like you're looking at a situation where at minimum just off of promotions either in the house or out of the house, right? You're probably going to have to replace two guys on the defensive side. I think you're going to have to replace the linebackers coach because I don't think he's any good.
I think they should. Whether they will or not remains to be seen.
I mean, especially if Hafley is gone.
Yeah.
Like, that's your guy. Like, this guy's claim to fame is he coached Isaiah McDuffie his senior year. That's the only NFL coach or the only NFL player he's ever touched
before. There's no higher accolade than coaching Isaiah McDuffie, would you say, in high school or college, whatever it was.
College.
That's as high as it gets.
Yeah, and then I think the other one is the offensive line coach. You got to get better there. Like you can't be
Matt basically throwing the O-line under the bus in the day after press conference, to me, had to seal Butkus's fate. Like, I don't know how you can say that and be like, the offensive line basically screwed this up on numerous occasions and then say, yep, Luke gets his job back this year. I don't know how you can do that.
No, can't get someone serious in then. And again, so like I wrote the thing this week. People are excited that I said the thing. The thing is the thing that I've been talking to you about for like 2 years now, right? Where we bring up these examples of we lowballed Darren Rizzi. We kept the Petten staff was important to the Packers when they made the hiring of head coach in 2019, right? Like head coaches came in, interviewed, and they were told, hey, we're going to keep Petten, right? So like that's part of our situation here.
Can I take an aside really quick to tell you a Mike Petten story that I heard today / see if you've ever heard this story. I heard today on the radio I was talking and they had a story and I've never heard this before that in the 2020 NFC championship game,
I've heard stories about the 2020 NFC championship game
on the Kevin King play at the end that Mike Petten had a different play call in on that play and that Matt LaFleur overruled it and gave a different play, and that's what ultimately led to the Kevin King touchdown. And I heard that Mike Petten almost like quit on the spot after it because that basically Matt overruled him on the play.
Yeah, because we blitzed there, right?
I'd have to go back. It's been a hot second since I've watched that play. I've just never heard the story before.
The Scotty, whatever,
Scott
right?
Miller.
I believe Matt's talked about it in press conferences before.
Okay. Maybe I'm just not remembering it. That could easily be too.
No, I don't. So
maybe it's trying to block it.
Andy, I'm saying this because I was in the same position as you. Because I had talked to a guy who was on one of the Penn staffs. And he was basically making the argument that like Matt should have fallen on the sword harder for that, basically. And was like, yeah, he said he admitted it in press conference and stuff like that, but didn't take the heat off of us. And I'm like, well, we lost the NFC Championship game. I don't know if anything would have taken the heat off of us. Like, that's not how it works here, right? But I do think he's admitted that in public.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, but it spiked my interest. Either way, I can see. So obviously we had the Rizzi, the Patton.
Oh, Rizzi, Patton. The D-line coach stuff that we banged the drum on for years about their dumb internal hires. Like Montgomery survived Capers, Patton, and the end of Joe Barry, right? That's never a good sign. And then they internally promoted Revrovich. He stunk. And then, to be honest, the guy on the Penn staff that really had the juice for the pass rushers, that was Mike Smith. That was Mike Smith. You know what Mike Smith is doing right now?
Is he in Minnesota or did he leave Minnesota?
He was in Minnesota for a bit. He's in New England.
Okay.
He's in New England. You want to know what they did this past weekend? They got like 6 sacks.
I was going to say they won a game. That's awful too. I never know how to pronounce his first name, but Clavion Chaisson is having his best year of his career too right now there too. But yeah,
for sure. But yeah, I mean, there's just a bunch of stuff that always happens with the assistant pool. Schefter finally admitted it because the people on the radio asked him about it. And I was like, let's go. And he was like, yeah, there's just like, they like this budget and they want it to stay within this budget. And I was like, this is what I've been saying to you guys for 3 years, and I give you guys the anecdotes, and nobody believes the anecdotes. So I was like, the reason I wrote that article was because I was hitting up people in the know, right? Sources, most of them were people who represent coaches, you know, agents, right?
Sure.
And I'm like, okay, but people don't believe me, right? Because I can give them these anecdotes, but then they just point back at Rich Bisaccia, right? And all you need is the one. We have this Rich Bisaccia, and he's the bad man, and we're spending money on coaches, and he's the reason we're bad at special teams. Even though we've been bad at special teams for 30 years, the team thinks it's a market inefficiency. We use the bottom end of the roster to allocate those spots to more draft and develop guys so that we can go into the draft 2 years ahead instead of have to draft for this year, all this stuff. But it's Bisaccia. Bisaccia is the one who's wrong, right? That's what I always get. So I'm like, how do I get this to fan? Like, how can I give more evidence to fans that there's an issue with the assistant spending pool, basically? Yep. And the quick response I got was, well, look at their experience compared to other playoff teams. So I did that, and it took me 3 hours to figure that thing out. But then I got the numbers, and we're at about, I think it was 27% of outside experience of the other 13 NFL teams, you know, on average. So, yeah, I mean, in Green Bay, we're everyone's first job, right? Like Matt has those stories about like, oh, we were in Houston and we were the piss boys and all that stuff, right? It's oops, all piss boys. Oops, all like our wide receiver coach used to get Butkus coffee and Butkus used to get Stenovich coffee, right? That's how it works here. And we're not going to the outside market and attracting other guys unless you bomb several internal hires in a row like they did on the defensive line. We just talked about Montgomery, who, by the way, he's back in the league. He's coaching the Cincinnati Bengals. They're 30th on defense. They're 30th in run. They're 30th in pass. It's not good. It's bad.
Not great.
He's not good at his job, right? And I've had people on staffs with him tell me as much. Then they did the Revrovich thing. Revrovich obviously didn't work out. Special teams, they lowballed Rizzi, right? You bring in Menenga, who his only experience as a special teams coordinator was on a losing Vanderbilt team for 1 year. There's big differences between college rules and NFL rules in special teams. And then what did they do to replace him? They internally promoted Maurice Drayton, a Menenga assistant. So they had to go to market and say, like, we messed up so bad, we actually have to spend. But that's their problem there, right? Is that that's their response. Their response is, someone gets promoted out of a job, we can handle it internally. Unless we bomb out several times, okay, now we have to spend. the assistant pool has to be higher, period. It has to be. So whether it's Matt or someone else, like, we have to spend more on assistant coaches. It's crazy.
It'd be one thing too if you were, you know, the piss boys, as you say it, if you all, like, had a staff of, like, you know, what was it under, you know, Mike Shanahan, where Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur and Kyle Shanahan and, like,
sure, but you know what they're doing at the offensive line coach? They have the guy who coached for Kyle's dad. Yeah, you know who's the running backs coach? It's the guy who coaches for
Kyle's dad. I'm not saying you can do it everywhere. I'm just saying if you have a couple of those guys that are ultra motivated and ready to prove themselves and all of a sudden go on to something great, sure, but they haven't exactly stumbled upon those guys either. And in the meantime, the absurd, insane thing to me about this entire thing, and again, kudos to you for sort of unearthing this in the way that you've done it. But the absurd thing is that you are, by definition, a draft and develop team, which means that you are putting extra time, effort, energy, and resources into being the youngest team in the NFL, into developing players, into making sure that you have young players who can get better during their time in your organization, which for any team that's doing that would make me believe that you would want the best coaching pool possible that you could put together so that you have the best mentors, teachers, and coaches for these young players to teach them to get better on their journey with you as you're the youngest team in the league 3 years in a row. So to half-ass, you're undercutting your own philosophy by doing it this way and making it so that if that's the way you're going to, it would be the other way around. If you say we're going to be a veteran team and we're going to, you know, kind of have guys that can coach themselves and be a whatever. And we're going to, like, okay, fine. Maybe you can half-ass some of the coaching stuff or just bring in some former players and maybe not have to pay them as much or whatever. But if you're going to be this team, like, almost operated as like a college program where we're going to churn the roster and continually have young guys and run it like a program, by God, pay your coaches and get the best ones possible, because there's no salary cap for coaches. And that is going to be your cheat code to bringing up those young players and making them better. It is absurd that that is something that they are ultimately doing. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, whether you're starting a new routine or making player picks for the very first time, trying something new can be difficult. But in life and on Prize Picks, it always feels good to be right. And with high-pressure playoff matchups every weekend and elite hoops action every night, the action never stops. And Prize Picks lets you take control. Now, I love how simple Prize Picks is to use and how fun it is to play. This football season has been even more fun this year with Prize Picks, and getting in my picks for each slate of game has been a super fun part of each football weekend. And listen, I get we're all having withdrawals from our fantasy leagues being over with, so this is the perfect time to stay in fantasy game mode by using Prize Picks every single week. And if you haven't checked lately, Prize Picks is now available in all 50 states. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And again, make sure that you're using that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right.
Been screaming it from the rooftops for genuinely several years, right? I thought, because again, like, and like, this is the weird thing, because we get into like the team's actual money, right? And that's the part where I don't know, right? Like, I'm upfront telling you guys, like, the people that I talk to, right, are people who work in football. They are agents, right? Or I can ask friends who are reporters elsewhere, like, hey, do you think there's any way you can get an answer on this question, right? Because if I'm not directly capable of asking a person, I like a way around it, right? I don't have, like, when you're covering Green Bay, Andy, I know, like, the beat gets a ton of crap and stuff like this. When you're covering Green Bay, you're like a veterinarian, right? It's not exactly like they're telling you what's wrong or going on with them. Like, yeah. I know there's other places in the NFL where every week the head coach and the general manager are having basically off-record press conferences with the media for like 20 minutes each. That's not happening in Green Bay.
It'd be nice.
That's not happening. That's not happening in Green Bay. When one of the first Schefter clips, when he goes on ESPN Wisconsin, And he's talking about the LaFleur stuff, because I clipped up, got all the quotes, all that stuff out of it, right? Chewy was on the radio, and he was talking to him, and he's like, yeah, I talked to all the Packers beat reporters. I don't think any of them know Ed Policy, right? Like they
had that one, they have a core group that they get together and like, you know, super secrets, like non, like, so I get notified by Packers PR when there's going to be a press conference. Right. Mm-hmm. But they'll be every once in a while, there'll be like that one meeting with Policy. They'll every once in a while, there'll be like a pre-draft thing with Goody or an off-season thing with Goody. Every once in a while, there'll be like this super secret that's not open to everybody. And it's like, of just the hardcore beat guys, right? So it'll be like Domovsky, Silverstein, Pete Doherty, Bill Huber, exactly. Like it's like eight to ten, maybe eight guys, Wilde, like eight guys that get invited to that super secret meeting. There was that one with Ed Policy that's taken place so far, and that's been it. There's not been a public Ed Policy one. There's not been anything since that time. That it has been one time and one time only with Ed Policy so far.
So Now that I have finally, it feels like I've finally gotten some people to buy in, right? On the idea of like, okay, the assistant pool isn't, right? We can't just hold up Rich Bisaccia and all the questions go away.
Yep.
Right? The question I'm now getting is like, why? Why aren't the Packers spending, right? And that's not something I'm not even –
yep.
Gonna try. Like that's the part
it's an impossibility. I mean, it just comes down to I think Schefter had said the B word. He said budget. I think they have a legitimate budget for it, whatever that number is. I don't think they want to go over it. I think, and whatever, it's a stupid way to look at it. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't know.
I will say, so now we're venturing into I think territory, yep. Right? I'm putting my hands up. I get to think and not know in this situation. There are kind of weird spending habits happening in the league right now, right? So you can look at so cash spend on players, okay? That's one of them. Before the pandemic, cash spend matched cap spend. Okay? So pretty much what you had on the cap, that's what you spent for the most part. And you know, you have variations, right? Where it's, "Oh, okay, I just gave my franchise quarterback a big signing bonus," right? But then that evens out, and there's only so many of those guys, you know, in the NFL. Like they kind of stack up against each other. It's for the most part, yep, it was pretty flat. Okay. Since the pandemic, right, when the cap didn't jump the way that they thought it was going to jump, because you couldn't have fans in the stands, and that impacted revenue and all that stuff. And they had that whole sort of weird period for about 2-3 years where the cap was kind of catching back up, and it was sort of backlogged. Yep. The league as a whole is now spending 10% more on players than the cap.
Guess what loophole I expect to change in the next CBA.
Well, Andy, I tried to talk about this in like July when all the NFLPA stuff was happening. And all we got was, why are you guys talking about this stuff? I want to talk about who, Isaiah Simmons. Tell me how Isaiah Simmons is doing in practice.
Isaiah Simmons had a huge week this week, by the way. Huge week. He was the best special teams player. You would have been better than any special teams player Green Bay had this week.
We would have used him as a gunner.
He would have been phenomenal.
We would have used him as a gunner.
I don't think he should have made the team, but we would have used him as a gunner.
No, but keeping him on the practice squad to be able to call up in situations like this would have been very helpful.
That is a different story. That would have helped a whole lot more than Shamar Bartholomew out there. I forgot where I was going. Oh, the spend. Yep. So you have this 10% spend that is happening every year. Because some teams are not, like the actual franchises are not operating at a profit. And I know that sounds crazy. And there's like, here, do I have my wallet with me? I'm a card-carrying union member. All right. Let me see if I can find the damn thing. You guys are going to have to wait while I pull this thing out. Do I have it?
Yep, he's got the Costanza wallet. There's a billion things in there. He's got to buy one, get one.
It's so bad. I was about to flash up the cards, but then I realized my numbers are on there. I'm not going to pull it out. I'm a card-carrying human member. One thing I'm not going to do is like fall on the sword for billionaires. Okay. That's not what I'm here for. Okay.
Exactly.
But there's logic into why they're not running these things as profitable operations. The thing is, the team is how you get the stadium. And then you get to do all these things around the stadium. Okay. And then you also have like the valuation, the valuation problem. Okay. So it took the NFL 100 years to get its first $1 billion sale for a franchise. It happened 2014, the Buffalo Bills. The San Francisco 49ers just got a valuation of $9.5 billion. Right. So it's gone, right? Like 7-8x
yeah.
in a decade. And that's why like the barrier to entry into the NFL to buy a team is super high. That's why Tom Brady bought the Raiders, and part of the deal was you have to help run this organization. And that's why he's hustling on Fox right now to make money. Cause he's like, dude, all the money that I got in my playing career, that is spent. Cause I bought part of the Raiders, but that, you know, line goes up, right? Peyton Manning, I know people who work for Omaha Productions and stuff, right? All the like Mina Kimes podcast, for example, right? All that stuff is run by Peyton Manning. The like side stream that he does for Monday Night Football, all that. He's trying to build liquidity so that he can eventually buy a team and get sort of like the same type of deal as Tom Brady, where it's like, okay, you're only going to let me buy the team because I'm going to help you run it. But that's where I want my money, right?
Yeah.
And now we have private equity firms that are saying that is where we want our money. They're not making more than 32 NFL teams, right? So it's all speculative valuations that is kind of driving this. Because when the 49ers are the second highest spend in the NFL and they're not making a profit, what they do is they sell 6% of the team and they get a $500 million cash infusion. Which is what the Packers have saved over the
entirety of the history of the career, yeah, the franchise.
Right?
Yep.
So the Packers can't tap into that. So if they're saving money because they're worried about that, right? I could kind of understand it. There are some solves for that though. Like the future doesn't necessarily have to look bad. Look, you're definitely again, we talked about this, right? In June of last year, Roger Goodell said that there are owners who openly question the integrity of the salary cap at this point because of the way that you can manipulate it and stuff.
Big time.
There is like I would have to look at the numbers again, but, and this is over 6 years, but it still happened. The Cleveland Browns and either the Rams or the Steelers, I can't remember who was at the bottom. It's something like $370 million difference in terms of cash spending on players, right? So
the
when
Browns
you see
top, right,
yeah, the Browns are at the top. The Browns are at the top. Insane. I can't remember if it was the Rams or Steelers at the bottom.
I have to look at it.
So like when you see the number and it's like, oh, they have $500 million in reserves, like that, if you're spending like the Browns, that could be gone in a decade, and that's just on players. That's not including coaches and stuff.
Yep.
The Raiders, like Mark Davis, doesn't have the money. Mark Davis comes from my dad owned the Raiders money. He doesn't come from, you know, I did really well at a hedge fund and all this stuff. But you know what Mark Davis does? I think he's got like four coaches, head coaches that he's going to end up paying over the next year. Cause I think Gruden's still under contract. I think something like three general managers now. But that doesn't stop him. It's dumb, right? It's dumb.
Yeah.
But that doesn't stop him from spending, because what does he do? I'll sell part of my team to Tom Brady. Boom. I made up the money. Right? The Packers don't have the button.
That avenue. Yep.
Yeah, they don't have the button. And also, I think it's pretty dumb, because eventually at some point, these private equity firms are going to gain a voting control of the team, right? Once you, hey man, you don't have 50% anymore. It's a vote. This is a vote every single time you're doing this. These teams are going to be like, well, why are we upgrading any of these facilities? Why are we paying these players so much if wins aren't correlated to money coming in? Why are we building the infrastructure for a scouting department? Don't you guys have video at home? And they won't understand.
This is how the Packers win. They're the only team that doesn't.
Right. Which is my point. Because The problem is you get these the actual doomers, right? The ones who accuse me of being a doomer, but then read the stuff about the assistant coaches and are like, well, we're going to be screwed forever. And I'm like, no, we're not. We just kind of like got to figure out how we're going to survive. Because I do think that this is a blip, right? To your point, the CBA is coming up in 23. I wanted to talk about all of this in June. And you guys told me to shut up so we could talk about special teamers who didn't make this team. The CBA is going to come up in 2030, and they can either close a loophole, or they can say, well, then we're just not going to have a salary cap, which is what some ownership groups want. Like Jerry Jones and guys like that, they're okay with the reason the people who own the big clubs who – okay, pause time. I know we didn't talk much Bears in this episode. This is going to be great. People are going to be furious in the comments.
Well, we got time.
A lot of people watch Packers games, right? You would think that does the Packers very well. It doesn't.
No.
Because all of that money gets shared into 30 seconds. Yep. So why would Jerry Jones agree to that structure? Everyone is watching Cowboys games. Why is he sharing with other people, Andy?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Why he would not? Well,
no, why he shares? Why he shares instead of just saying, I'll sell all the Cowboys home games to a regional
sport. It's a requirement. Is it not?
Well, they like it. The real answer is because the salary cap only exists because of collective bargaining. Right? So yep. The only reason that they share the TV profits is because they have the salary cap. The point of sharing TV profits is to also keep salary down. And now we have ownership that is breaking rules and they're spending well above that, right? Like again, Jimmy Haslam, I think they're it's something like $220 million over the average NFL team over the last 6 years, right?
With great results.
in a world where you're buying a subscription package to Packers games or Cowboys games or insert any other team, right? The Packers will gain more revenue than the average NFL team in those situations, right? Yep. So there's kind of different paths to where this thing can land. And I understand why the team kind of wants to be conservative and protect their butts a little bit. But I don't think it's all doom and gloom. And they can definitely afford to upgrade at linebackers, coach. All right? I'll say that. They can afford it.
That's the crazy thing to me is that, you know, okay. Trayvon Diggs, you paid him $500,000 for one snap.
Yeah.
For one snap. You paid him $500,000 for one snap. I could understand. Like, what do you think that the top linebackers coach is going for per year?
Dude, if you wanted to hire anyone who even had like a assistant head coach title attached to his name, yep. Right? I think the max would be like $1.5 million.
My point is like, if this was something where like, oh my God, like these, you know, the top linebackers coach is going for 18 mil per year. Okay. Well, let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
You spent $500,000 on Trayvon Diggs for one snap this year, for one snap on defense. And you can't afford $1.5 million, $2 million for the best linebackers coach in the league. So your three young linebackers in Hopper, Quay, and Cooper can get the best possible mentoring and coaching that you could possibly want. It's insane to me. And of all the teams that would want to do that, it's the team with the youngest roster year over year over year. And it's a cheat code. It's the one, it doesn't have a salary cap. You don't have a limit to what you can spend on getting the best possible coaches in your organization. It's beyond absurd to me. And it's an inefficiency and Green Bay's got to find a way to fix it.
Yeah. I mean, this is why, right. When they got the soccer games, right. And they got the Wisconsin, Alabama at Lambeau Field. I was like, that's great. And I don't think you guys realize how important that's going to be to
get what's done for Notre Dame coming up this year.
Yeah.
Is it Alabama? It's Alabama, right? Is it what's this year? It's Wisconsin. I think it's Wisconsin Notre Dame coming up this year.
Is it? So like having that stuff is great. The draft being a big proof concept, right? Like amazing. You guys blew the door off, all that stuff. But it's like, okay, what are we doing this April, right? What are we doing this April? Because it's got to keep coming. Because, like, once the Bears eventually move and once Kansas City eventually moves, I think Lambeau is going to be one of two stadiums that are outdoor and have been built since, like, 1996 that still exist in the NFL, right? And the other one is Hard Rock that has been renovated 1,000 times and is basically like a brand new stadium. And the thing about Hard Rock, too, is – Miami's got a little bit of a different vacation pattern than Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I don't mean that as a slight. It's just that's the situation that they're in. They play Dolphins games on Sundays. They play Hurricanes games on Saturdays. They have all sorts of concerts there. They have the F1 track and stuff like that that they built outside of that stadium. They bring in all sorts of soccer games. They're going to have World Cup games there, all that stuff, Copa America, all that, right? Like, that's what you're competing against, and prices are not going to come down anytime soon.
Nope.
Like, if you're worried about money, you got to figure out how to make money, right? And they're making money, but they're not making a whole ton of profit, right? Like, if you do the Niners valuation and all that stuff, what they added last year into their, like, rainy day fund, right, would take over 100. Like, if you bought the Packers at $9.5 million, which is what the Niners were valued at, right, in their last sale, it would take over 100 years at that profit margin to go back whole, right?
Yep.
So if we're not spending on the coaches and we're not saving that much, that means we're not making enough money, right? Period.
Need another sledding hill.
Build three of them. Do whatever you need to do. All help.
yeah, exactly. Badgers, it Notre works, Dame.
All help.
Badgers, Notre Dame, Sunday, September 6th at Lambeau Field. Neutral site game for both teams is what it's considered. So yeah. Badgers going to get crushed. Yeah, I know. Badgers going to get crushed on that game, I'm sure. But yeah, that should be a fun one at Lambeau Field. Last time they upset LSU when the Badgers played at Lambeau. I was at that game. It was a ton of fun. TJ Watt, huge game. It's fun times. Oh, yeah. I forget, it was Leonard Fournette at running back for LSU. That was a good game.
Fun team.
Very much so. All right, where do we want to go? There's a billion things that we could talk about. Is there anything else from Packers Bears that stood out to you just to kind of put a knife in the back of this game and never think about it ever again?
No, I think it came down to the offensive line. It came down to the linebackers.
I'll ask one thing. Matthew Golden, we got our flash of Matthew Golden in its final moments. And I saw a lot of people, you know, jump to, we told you so. Like, why wasn't this is a malpractice by the organization to not play him more. He played
like the first 6 weeks of the season or whatever.
I know. We talked about this too, of like, if you actually look at the snaps by wide receivers this year, let me see if I can pull it up really quick here.
He might be second, right?
Because I think of all the games he was close. It was super close. So Romeo at 831.
Yeah.
Golden's at 488. He has the second most snaps of any wide receiver on the team. That's like the thing that just stuns me. It's like, yes, I think they probably could have had times where they utilized him a little bit better, maybe had him a little bit more involved in the game plan, etc. But dude literally played the second most snaps of any wide receiver on the team.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the same thing with the Harbaugh stuff to me. Because the Harbaugh stuff, like, first of all, that was never going to happen. Even if the Packers like did move on from Matt, right? Just in terms of like the spend and all that stuff. I mean, I don't know. Maybe the Packers surprised me. They spend a ton on assistant coaches this year. But I from people in the agent world, they would not have expected the Packers to be, you know, in the running for Harbaugh, right? Just based off of spending patterns of the past. But the Packers fans were attaching to him and they're like, man, Matt chokes so much in playoff games and the special teams are bad. That's why we got to go get Harbaugh. And I'm like, guys, it's the same situation. Like, they just lost on a kicker missing a field goal that hadn't missed the entire year. Like, this is the same picture. If you're just looking at output, right? Now, I know people get mad about Matt's demeanor and how he talks in press conferences. He smiles too much. Why are offensive linemen wearing sleeves? All that stuff. Like, whatever. But if you're just going by like record, like there's not that much of a difference.
Somebody has to fall on the sword when these things happen. People want blood. They want their blood when something happens. And
that's the thing, is like people want a head. And I'm like, I think it's like the heads that make the most sense to me are the offensive line coach and the linebackers coach. But I don't think people are even like looking there. Right.
I think people are looking at Butkus. I don't think anyone knows about the line. I bet 99% of people couldn't name the linebackers coach right now, but I think Butkus has got some of that. But to your point, no, it's been mostly Bisaccia, LaFleur, a little bit of Goody smattered in, but yeah, for the most part, those two.
Can I tell you my Bisaccia theory? And this is a think, this is not a 9-0.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I think the reason they paid Rich so much was because they wanted to limit test what special teams looks like when you actually have a qualified special teams coordinator in Green Bay, but still have the roster restrictions that Green Bay has, where it's like what they seem to have settled down on, right, is that fifth linebacker spot. We can use it on a Neiman or a Christian Welch,
right? Somebody like that. Yep.
On to be good on kickoffs, you have to use the linebackers and you have to use the safeties, right? Like Xavier McKinney, you have to play kickoff coverage. Even if you're the outside man, you're basically playing safety in the situation.
Safety, right? Yep.
Because that gets you good enough on punt and that gets you good enough on kickoff. And all you have to do really was one roster spot and then tell guys that they have to play. And I think that's what they did. And they're whether it's Rich or it's someone else, because they could probably can Rich do the same thing that they're doing under Rich at this point, and have it be cheaper. Now you're going to have to pay Rich the extra year because he's still another year under contract. NFL contracts are fully guaranteed. So Rich is already paid for 26, right?
Yep.
But if you want to be cheaper moving forward, add that to the salary pool in 27, 28, however you want to think about it. Like, I think the team can do that, but I don't think their mentality is going to change on specials at all. And the Packers have done this before too, by the way, where they genuinely look for outside help and are like, teach us what the limits of this are, right? Because Milt Hendrickson was another one in the front office, right, where the Packers recognize, like, we want to be more aggressive in free agency, we want to be more aggressive on the waiver wire. The practice squad has gotten expanded. Like, I think when the last time the Packers won a Super Bowl, I think the practice squad was like six guys. And now it's up to 17, right? It's a totally different ballgame in terms of the volume of transactions you're dealing with. And they had to go buy Milt Hendrickson and have him basically come in and be like, look, you guys can ID a football player. Here's how you structure your time, your organization, you know, all that stuff, so that you know when a Rasul Douglas is available, right? Yep. When whatever you want to say about Keyshawn has provided value relative to his contract in Green Bay, when a Keyshawn Nixon is available, stuff like that. When, you know, they had their eyes on Josh Wiley since the draft, I won't count that. But like moves like that, right, where you're bringing in practice squad guys and you're like, maybe we should keep him around next year, right? Like Nick Neiman, a guy who became available at the cutdown deadline, right? They have to be taught that thing, but they like sought guidance for it. Now, is that what fans want to hear, where they're like, hey, man, the Packers really – care about three phases, and it's the three phases that I told you they care about all season. It's punt, it's kickoff coverage, and it's field goal. And the field goal kicker has been shaky and has been shaky for a while here in Green Bay. They do not care about the return game on either kickoff or punt, and they don't care about field goal rush, right? And I think we got a great example of it with the debuting of Josh Jacobs and Keyshawn Nixon as kick returners this week. In a go home, win or go home game, they're like, we're going to use our best returners. And I know a lot of people say, like, oh, that came out of nowhere. Andy, they were doing this in camp.
Yeah.
Jacobs and Keyshawn were doing this in camp.
I brought it up.
They always knew that was their best guys there. They didn't care enough about it to put their top players in those situations during the season, which – if you want to say like, hey, we didn't want to add that wear and tear on Jacobs and all that stuff, or Keyshawn even, because they're starters. Like, I'm not going to blame you for that. But then, like, they're not spending on the other 10 guys who are blocking for them either. So, like, it's going to be hard for this team to, like, playoff time. Now we're going to be good on special teams. I don't know if it's going to work like that. I think they're going to be pretty good moving forward, whether it's Rich or not, at special teams coordinator on half of the phases of special teams, right? Punt, kickoff, and field goal. And then the other ones, they're basically going to be like, do no harm.
That's why all of this stuff is so insanely hard, because I think some of the things that people are frustrated by is like, well, you're not putting your best guys out there. You are, you know, you're sitting guys in the last game of the year. You're not playing guys in preseason.
Well, those games didn't count. You want more injuries?
No. Here's my point. Like, those are the things that I hear frustrated at times. Matt, or like, they're not doing enough in practice. They're doing too many walkthroughs. This team has tried to bubble wrap their team as much as possible to try to make it so that guys don't get hurt, and they end up with one of the most injured teams in the league.
And they changed their training staff.
Yeah, yeah.
They just changed their training staff.
And their strength and conditioning, all of it, yeah. Right? So, like, they've sent guys to Madison and to get studies to figure out how to get less injured and how to, you know, get their body in a better spot. And they've done almost everything you can to be, like, the least injured team in football. And they're one of the most, like, what my point was is just, like, how, like, just the margin for error with some of this stuff that is out of your control is beyond absurd. To your point about Brandon McManus, McManus in the second half of the season showed 0.0 sign that he would have a game like that going into the postseason. And if he makes one of those kicks, it changes everything, because you're in field goal range at the end. Yep. Now you'd have to make that one too.
Yeah.
But now you're going into OT in that game. And who knows what happens there, but you get my point. And if he makes all of them, it's game over. It's game, set, match. It's done. I shouldn't say that, because they probably still would have recovered an onside kick and whatever. But even still, like, they showed no signs of having that issue going into the last game of the season. So, like, some of this stuff where, again, we want blood and we want somebody's head. And I'm not even saying that I don't understand the frustration with it, but the amount of variance on this stuff that changes the course of your season that you have 0% control over is just insane. We'll be right back.
Yeah. And then, do you want to talk about it? The 2-point play? Have you talked about it? Because I can tell you exactly how it happened. And it's crazy that they were prepared for the situation.
Ben Johnson knew exactly what Green Bay was going to do in that situation.
100%.
He knew. He saw the one. They had at least one play of it where they went in that. And you and I have not talked. I've actually not watched the all 22 of this play yet. But I know they had a similar play earlier this year where they played the extra linebacker. Wasn't that the pick from Hopper? Like 2-point. So. Oh, no, he broke it up. Yes. I thought it was Hopper that broke up the play. Not a pick, but he broke it up. And they went with the extra linebackers. And I think Ben Johnson knew exactly what matchup he was going to get. And he was going to get Colston Loveland one-on-one. He didn't know it was going to be Nick Neiman, but he was going to get Colston Loveland one-on-one with a linebacker. He was prepared for, like, I don't know if he has somebody that goes through or he goes through and fit. Like, so how many plays of the, what would you call that defense? Goal line defense, just, you know, one defensive back, but he sees, like, unique formations that a defense uses would be my guess. And figures out, all right, how can I get them in that formation? And then how can I take advantage of it? And he knew exactly what he was going to get. And he got Colston Loveland one-on-one with a linebacker, which even accentuated by the fact that it's Nick Neiman and it's taking money.
Yeah. So the way that it works, right, when Green Bay gets by the goal line, sometimes, not always, sometimes they play goal line. And a lot of it is based off of personnel, right?
Yep.
The offense is personnel. So, like, they'll play nickel at the 1-yard line sometimes. It just depends what you're throwing out there. So the Bears come out with 6 offensive linemen, 3 tight ends, a back, and a quarterback. So, I mean, you could see it on before, like, the huddle or anything, right? Because they have the play that scores the touchdown. This is on the broadcast. The play that scores the touchdown, the broadcast shoots to the Bears sideline going crazy, and you start seeing guys go like this, right? Which is heavy. This is basically universal symbol for heavy personnel, right? So it's heavy personnel. Green Bay throws out a goal line because they want to stop whatever formation you're going to line up in with 3 tight ends and an extra offensive lineman, right?
Got to stop the run.
So you get that. They start in that tight spot, and then they scatter, and it's out. And I go, oh, God, right? Like, that's a bad feeling. Like, I don't know if you call a timeout there. But your butt's definitely tight at that
you know
point.
What you do in that situation, Justice, and that they should have done on the other play that they called timeout in the second half, and I almost asked Matt about this. You jump off sides. You stop the
honestly,
play.
Not a bad idea.
And yeah. you jump off sides. Because yeah. you like Matt has to start understanding, especially in playoff games, but in second half of games, timeouts are gold. Yeah. 5 yards? Who the cares about 5 yards? Who the hell
that's
cares
the
about
the goal? Right?
Yeah, so that's happening. That's in the 2-point conversion, it's a yard. It's a yeah. yard. So yeah. like well, we have to understand in these games that timeouts are so insanely valuable. And a play like that, when you're not ready to be lined up and you've got Nick Niemann lined up 1-on-1 against Colston Loveland, yeah. that you have to, as a coach, have a nuclear call of like somebody jump off sides and touch an offensive lineman. We've yeah. got 10 guys lined up on defense. It's the second half. We need our timeouts. And we just go and jump off sides. We're not going to waste the timeout in this situation. Jump off sides, take the 5-yard penalty, keep our timeout, and let's get reset. And especially in a goal line situation, half the distance to the goal, and you have got a bad look, and I don't want to waste the timeout in the second half, you go and you shove the center to the ground, and you do whatever you need to do to get the attention of, we're not getting this playoff, we'll take the penalty.
Keep running after the quarterback too, because
yeah,
we don't want
him
to have a free play.
Yeah, yeah, get the 15-yard penalty too. That's only half the distance to the goal at that point too. Just
I'm not going that far. I'm not going that far. I'm just saying, don't give him a free rush.
I agree.
The other part of it too, Niemann would have never been in that spot unless Edgerrin Cooper went down.
Cooper is out.
They were prepared.
The other one with Cooper too is the crazy. I think one of the best throws of the year by Caleb Williams on that fourth down play. If that's Edgerrin Cooper instead of Isaiah McDuffie, who's blitzing on that play, if Cooper is a tick quicker, and McDuffie played it well, McDuffie did everything he could have on that play to get there. If Cooper is the same spot and is just like, and he's a 4-3 guy instead of a 4-6 guy or whatever, like if he just get, if he, because like McDuffie almost disrupts it enough where he's not going to get that throw off already. And if he's just a tick quicker and that's Edgerrin Cooper, that might be game, set, and match right there.
Yeah. Caleb had like 3 really incredible throws in this game.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not the most consistent yet, but like the high, high level throws where I know it's driving fans crazy. And I'm just like, folks, there's not a defense for that. If he can get that ball off.
That's what we as Packers fans have been doing to other teams for forever. And it sucks now that there's another quarterback in the division that can do it to us.
I saw a list of all the Bears quarterbacks, you know, Rodgers, Love, Favre had beaten, and Bears fans are like, but we have one now. We're not dealing with that anymore. Good for them.
It's not to that level yet. It's not to that level. If he does get consistent, look the hell out, because then it's going to be to that level. But
yeah, it's on. Let's compete. Yeah. I do the sleeves thing, the offensive lineman wearing sleeves, that has bothered me. Outside of that,
It bothers you that they wore sleeves, or it bothers you that
me that people give a damn. It bothers me like we're focused.
That's what I thought you meant, but I didn't know for sure.
Like that's what we're worried about with the offensive line is their sleeves. Grow up. The Mamby Pamby reaction to like Ben Johnson being like F the Packers and people having the cheese shredders and all that stuff. Like compete, baby. Let's go
win the damn game.
We're in it now. Like, if this team is going to get better, it's going to be because they're competing against teams like Chicago and Detroit regularly and not flinching and not whining and complaining on social media. Like, let that hate fuel you inside, baby. Let it fuel you.
I'm all in. I'm right there with you. There was like my very first initial reaction is like, oh, that's a douchey thing by Ben Johnson. And then as soon as I'm done with it, I'm like, no, it's not. It's fine. It's totally fine.
Did you see the screenshot?
It might be both. It might be douchey and fine at the same time. And I'm all for it. I'm not like against it, but yeah, it I have no issue with it.
Did you see the screenshot of him on the handshake line where he's like all squatted down? Like he's the perfect person to troll the Pat. It's so funny. It's so I want to smash his face in. Right?
Yeah.
But of like, course. This is good. This is good. We're feeling things in the rivalry. This is good.
I disagree. You know what was good? When we went 25-3 in a 28 game stretch against Chicago Bears. That was good. I enjoyed that more. I enjoyed when we won the playoff game against the Chicago Bears. That was good. I don't mind the rivalry, but I enjoy them being the worst of the two more often.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm in the same boat with you. I just Stop complaining about stuff on social media like that, guys. You guys are embarrassing me.
We're over an hour. We don't have to do anything else. I know you did a mock simulation. If nothing else, I want to plug people over to acmepackingcompany.com to go check that out. It's a fun look at sort of the off season and some of the ways that it could go and different things. Let's just do this lightning round. I think we would agree for unrestricted free agents, Malik Willis is going to be gone. I can't imagine a world in which he'd be back. I can't imagine a world in which Romeo is back. I would put it at like 3%, and I think that might be high.
They drafted Golden.
And Williams.
Yeah. I mean, you got ahead of it. That was the point of spending that pick.
Yeah, I totally agree. Rashid, after that performance this year, I can't imagine. And you drafted Morgan to take that spot. I can't imagine.
Spoiler alert, folks. This team drafts 2 years ahead of time.
Exactly. They're telling you who's going to go before they go, basically. And then if that player doesn't work out, or if the other player that you were trying to replace is just awesome, then they maybe try to course correct. But that did not happen with Rashid Walker. In fact, it went the opposite direction. Sean Ryan, I think, is maybe the most interesting one. I think I would bring Sean Ryan back. I think that would be the one that I would, and I think you did too in your simulation, but that's the one I would probably prioritize.
I would too. It's not a good center class. And I know, you know, some people are going to want to go for broke with like Linderbaum and stuff like that.
I can't imagine he's going to see the market, but if he does, he's going to get paid. He's going to be the top free agent on the market, probably.
I mean, who knows who the next head coach of the Ravens is going to be, right?
That's true.
At this point, but like he can only play for one team, and there's going to be teams that are very interested in his services. So
there's teams with $140 million in salary cap space or somewhere around that range. Like, and he might be the top guy in the market if he sees the market. Like it's going to be crazy money of what he gets, I would think.
Yeah, sign interior offensive linemen. Get those guys done before Linderbaum signs. Because when he signs, it's going to go nuts.
And the nice thing with Ryan is I actually liked how he played at center. But if Jacob Monk comes along and surprises you, some like Monk's ready to play at center, or you stumble upon a center in the draft or whatever, you just kick Ryan back to guard or have him as a swing inside guy. You can do so many different things with him. So yeah, I think there's enough value there.
Yep.
I'm with you. Enigbare. We talked about this already.
I think no, just because he would be stealing reps away from Colin Oliver and Baron Sorrell, who you spent mid-round picks on last year. I can't imagine him or Brent Cox come back. I actually think of the free agent DNs, the one I think is most likely coming back is going to be Aaron Mosby because of special teams. The problem with Mosby is now – He's accrued his seasons. He's a veteran in the NFL. So if he makes the team in week one, his salary is going to be fully guaranteed. So
do you get any veteran benefit from him at that point? Like a salary benefit?
I don't think it would cost much to keep him.
No, honestly. But isn't there like that one where you get to pay him a little bit above that minimum?
Yeah,
but
the AJ Dillon.
Yeah.
If they wanted to go that route, they could. I think you have to be under contract for your first 4 years though. So I don't know if Mosby has been on the team for 4 years. I think it could come back. I think it would be a cheap deal, probably just, you know, minimum salary and then a signing bonus. Wouldn't be surprised if the Packers cut him, kept him on the practice squad, and then, like, as soon as, like, someone goes down on the 53 in, like, week two or something, you bring him up. You're like, hey, now he's a roster spot that we can move around and up and down the practice squad if we want to do and all that stuff. So I think he's more likely to come, but unless you're watching the special teams, you probably didn't notice him. I thought he was going to die like three different times this year with like shoulder injuries that I was like, that's definitely a season ender. He just pops back.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, this is nuts.
I'm glad that the one person on our team that's immune to injuries is Aaron Mosby. That the one guy that can, like, no matter what happens to him, just keeps getting up is Aaron Mosby. That's the one that we used our, you know, invincibility hold on is Aaron. That's awesome. Great. Yeah. Wonderful. And then Quay's the other one.
I think he's gone because of the Doherty article that I think I've talked about on here before, where Doherty talked to him and was basically like, how are things going? And Quay was like, yeah, we haven't had contract talks in a long time. I'm like, that's not a good sign, right?
No.
I still, guys, and I get there's at least like four guys of my mentions every week who just like, you still committing to the Quay Walker $15 million per year thing? I think he's going to get that, whether like you think or not. Like when Jermaine Sherwood, I think he led the NFL in passing yards allowed this past year. And he's the justification for why every other linebacker who's coming off of a second contract or going into a second contract and is hitting the market is getting $15 million per year. We're not setting the bar high, but it's setting the bar low. This is now the floor for what a veteran starting linebacker cost is going to be, in the same way that we talked about with the Dan Moore at offensive tackle. It's why Rashid just had a terrible game. He's going to get $20 million per year.
Yeah, the money is going to be crazy because there's a ton of money out there, and the free agent class is ultra mega ass at this point. It's not a good
If you can spend above the cap, why would you let someone hit free agency?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the problem that the NFL is really actually dealing with, right?
The last good free agents that might exist in time are going to be like Xavier McKinney and Saquon Barkley. Like, those might be the, like, the last two really good players that hit for – thank you, New York Giants. The New York Giants couldn't figure it out soon enough of just like, hey, we should keep good players.
Yeah. What if we just paid these guys and just kept them for a bit? Yeah.
Nope, they couldn't figure that out. Thanks for Xavier, but it definitely created a monster in Philly last year, which was not very nice either with Saquon. Any other thoughts before we get you here? Any parting 2025 season thoughts? Any parting Packers, Bears, free agency, off-season look-aheads? We'll talk again all off-season, which will be great, and we'll look ahead to all of this stuff, but anything you want to get off your chest now?
I apologize for saying so many numbers that were big. I know it all sounds like 11 billion-y. Right when it comes out of my mouth, I just like those numbers actually matter. Once you understand the cost of things, like, it puts them into perspective. I think our biggest tackle our biggest need going into the offseason is going to be nose tackle, because I think they're going to try to bring Sean Ryan back, and then after that, I think the only guy that really is going to be a week one starter, if he's a rookie, would be a nose tackle at that point. So I would keep an eye on those guys. It seems like it's a good nose tackle class. It's good at linebacker. It's good at tight end. That is what I've been told. I think it's pretty good at offensive line outside of center, which, like, that doesn't help us a whole ton, right? But, you know, depth, all that stuff. I really like this guy, Dominic Orange. They call him Big Citrus, Andy. They call him Big Citrus. He's from Kansas City, ended up going to Iowa State. He was on path to be like a five-star recruit. He had offers from like Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, like all the big ones, right? And then a pandemic, he grew up to 400 pounds.
Whew.
School started getting scared of it, right? So he ends up going to Iowa State, basically works on his weight for 2 years, and then starts playing some real good football in a really funky scheme. So they play three high safeties. They only have five guys in the box. He's a true nose guard, head up on the center all the time. So he was really played as a true run stuffer. But his movement skills at 330, like, it's – you can put college tape of Kenny Clark and him next to each other. And I'm like, you guys are going to let us get this? Because right now you can look at the consensus board and they're like, yeah, he's like second roundish. And I'm like, oh, if he's there in the second round, like, we're going to take that guy, right? Yeah. So I'm rooting for Big Citrus. I'm sure off of nickname alone, people are going to be big fans of him. So
I was assuming immediately like somewhere down in the South for Big Citrus, but the last name certainly makes sense. So
yes,
I was not expecting Iowa State. We got Big Citrus
and then we got Dante Corleone, the Godfather at Cincinnati. That's the other
one. Okay.
And the Packers sent a scout to watch those two teams play against each other. Okay. They don't have many pro prospects other than those nose tackles. So I would guess they're looking at those nose tackles. Corleone has a blood clot condition. That's going to kind of be the hurdle for him. But people think he's like a second round talent who might go in the third round because of that. Who knows?
Any injury issues that we can add to this team is that's what we're looking for right
blood
now.
Blood clots, a change of pace, right? We got, what was it, narcolepsy?
Yeah, we got narcolepsy. We need some blood clots. We got a little bit of everything. We're trying to put together a full sitcom of a house MD sort of situation. That's going to be the next NFL streaming thing. It's going to be on Netflix. What was the big doctor show? Either Scrubs or something like House. Any of those? It's going to be one of those, but it's going to be based on an NFL medical team, and the Packers just seem to fit perfectly. We got everything going on.
If it brings money in, screw it. We can pay a linebacker coach. Do it. Send it. I want a line.
I'm all in. Justice, I cannot thank you enough, as always. I'm excited to have all of our incredible offseason conversations as we look at how this team is going to navigate a very interesting offseason. It's going to be one that I think doesn't have the big free agent splash, no first-round pick. Likely no head coaching change. We'll see if they have to make a change at defensive coordinator. That could be the one sort of big thing. We'll see if they make a change at special teams coordinator. That could be another thing. But outside of that, but I think it's going to be important offseason where they get a lot of those things right. And if there is value free agent signings, if there are, you know, second and third round picks that can come in and work in, like work in this team right away, I think those things are going to be really, really important. So it's going to be fun discussing with you all offseason long, my friend.
For sure. I'm hyped.
Go follow him. Ready. Yes, exactly. Go follow him. AcmePackingCompany.com at JUMOSQ on social media. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.